Well, there's not really much to talk about this week, is there, Carl? Except this.
God bless all of you for what you're doing. Please keep doing it. I hope that I can encourage you, and my heart goes out to you. God bless.
Welcome to another episode of Fox and Father with myself, Fox, and him.
The Father.
Are you? Really, though? Sorry, man. I couldn't help it.
That was below the belt.
That was a bit below the belt. Poor old Calv. I've dragged him out of bed in the early morning. So it's sort of mid-afternoon where I am in the middle of what was used to be called Ceylon and is now called Sri Lanka. And Calvin is still in Grand Rapids. All right. It's been a bit of a week. I mean, usually Calvin...
I've had a quiet one. I don't know about you.
Shut up. You usually wait for at least 3 months into the new year before you're cancelled.
That is true. My cancellation did come early this year.
So I'm going to frame the story because I've got to say something and then I just want you to talk. Okay. So when our good-natured friends, the lefties, massively lost the American election, they scrambling around for things to get upset about again. And Elon Musk was saying, from my heart to you. And it was more, for me, it was more of a sort of Captain America gesture. At no point did I equate it with a Nazi gesture at all, but our good friends, the very, very good losers on the left, decided to say Elon Musk, who is couldn't be more of a fan of the Jews, they've said is a Nazi. Ironic that the left do this when they actually can't even say the word Jew, as Angela Rayner proved in her tweet when she went, tonight I lit on Holocaust Memorial Day, she went, I lit a candle for people who died for being who they were. I'm like, yeah, who were they, Angela? Anyway, so Elon does this for my argue. Calvin gets the end of quite a long and, impassioned speech about the end of the West. And in the olden days, what used to happen was, and the right to life and anti-abortion, all this sort of stuff, very, serious topics. You get to the end of this. And in the olden days, there was this tactic where you would try and lighten the mood at the end of your speech with a sort of a little joke of some kind. Anyway, he goes, from my heart to you, in direct mimicry of Elon Musk. What followed was an absolutely ridiculous bad faith interpretation of what Calvin did. So I'm going to let Calvin pick up the story from walking off the stage, having said, from my heart to you, to rapturous laughter. And what's happened over the last couple of days, Cal, let us know.
Okay.
And I've got a cigar, by the way.
So this was last week. Last week was, it was epic, man. I mean, you and I were at the inauguration at the start of the week. And then at the end of the week, I was at the March for Life. And there were hundreds of thousands of people there. And I was over the moon. I thought, because this is the most important issue for me, as you know, for many Christians. So I was kind of jubilant. I'm like, okay, so there was a video message from the president of the United States. The vice president chose this event for his first public event. There were loads of representatives on stage. And this is part of the point I made in my speech, in that America, don't be downhearted. Like, you guys are fighting this fight. In England, we have 10,000 people at most at our March for Life, and we have to beg our MPs to come and join us. You guys have got it going. This is great. Use this momentum, build upon it. And I ended my speech. I said, my heart goes out to you. Clearly not a Nazi salute. I'm not a Nazi. It was no admission of membership of the National Socialist Party, if it even still exists. It was clearly a cheeky nod to Elon Musk, who had that week been out after the inauguration, excited, jubilant with his autistic energy, kind of body all over the place and saying, my heart goes out to you. That's it. And then, of course, the lefty media were like, oh, he's clearly a Nazi. It's like, well, no, he's not. He's just saying his heart goes out to the audience. And I did a cheeky note of that. Again, there was rapture, there was laughter, there was a standing ovation. The compere came on stage and said, amazing, amazing. And that was it. And everyone was like, well done, Calvin. And I'm like, oh, thank you. I managed to speak about the most important issue, the sanctity of life, at the National Pro-Life Summit. I've done my Christian duty for the day. Let's go relax. Now, just so the Thursday of this week, so that's a week later, after I've clipped it, put it online, again, lots of nice tweets from lovely people, Ava van der Bloek, people saying, yeah, well done, this is great. I think you retweeted it or Reclaim retweeted it. Canon Phil Harris, so sensible people too. So our side were like, yeah, this is great. And all the Christians were like, yeah, this is great. You know, you're talking about pro-life and you're having a cheeky little laugh at the end, again, lightening the mood, but gets the message out there. You know, everyone's heard this pro-life stuff before. You're adding a bit to make sure that the message gets heard. Like, great, good stuff. Then I have some meetings. I hear confession. I go out for dinner with one of my wardens and a priest who happens to be on the bishop's council. So that's the person between me and the bishop. And we have a lovely dinner. But while I'm out, my phone is getting lit up. And I mean lit up. Like, I've never had this before. So clearly someone doxed me. I can keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling through the missed calls. And the voicemails that they were leaving were just horrendous. And it's, I mean, I can scroll through all day. I'll play a couple of examples. These people are clearly, I'll try and find one that's not too bad, but.
I'm assuming this is Calvin's voicemail. Calvin, you're a punk ass, pussy ass bitch. You're a bitch. You're a pussy. Turn off all your shit. You do a Nazi salute and you turn off all your shit, you fucking coward ass pussy. You're fucking lucky I don't live close to you.
Why is that?
Fucking pussy ass bitch. And if you're any one of his motherfucking staff or anything, eat a fucking dick. Man,
he sounds fucking
I'll tell you what.
You MAGA Fs. That's the problem. It's MAGA Fs. It has absolutely nothing to do with.
The first guy sounded like he may benefit from his trip to explore the 12th.
What the fuck do you think you're fucking doing on TV? Doing a Nazi salute, pretending to be a fucking, my heart goes out to you like your fucking Lord and Savior, Elon Musk. You fucks, are you absolutely fucking kidding me? I hope that your fucking church is destroyed. You are not Christians. If you were Christians, this would not be a conversation. Go fuck yourself. Be Christian. Love like a Christian. You fucking.
I think, is he setting a good example? Is that how we're supposed to love as a Christian? Is he
acknowledging that what you're doing, he's acknowledging that you were parodying a thing.
They know, and they don't care. It's an attack line. They're like, okay, we can call him a Nazi now because it looks similar enough to being a Nazi, and we hate him. We hate what he stands for. We hate the MAGA movement. We hate Donald Trump. He likes Donald Trump. We hate Elon Musk. He likes Elon Musk. Let's call him that. Let's attack it. It's lazy. So lazy.
So the guy knew, what was interesting there is the guy knew that you were directly parodying Elon Musk.
They knew
what you were doing.
Yeah, they know, they don't care. It's not really about what I'm doing, it's about who I am, right? So it's they're looking for any excuse to attack all of us at all times. And they see that I'm at Trump rallies and pro-life rallies, and then they say, oh, that's similar enough to a Nazi. So we can call him a Nazi now. Like, they don't actually believe I'm a Nazi. It's just lazy. It's stupid.
How do they get your number? Can I ask? Is your number available on the website?
This has been part of it. So this is the first time I realized that I was being doxxed. So my inbox on my emails were flooded. My missed calls and my voicemails were flooded. And so I think someone doxxed me. And then I later learned that on Reddit, they're posting pictures of places that I frequent in Grand Rapids, in West Michigan, to try and say, go and confront him. This is where he'll be. So there are some nasty, nasty people out there who are the first ones to say, you're not a real Christian. You don't love your neighbor. But they are the ones that are, you know, just pieces of work and quite abusive. So I've had learned.
Can I ask a personal question? How does it feel like, just on a, before I get onto it, because I'm going to try and argue, I'm going to do my best to argue the position as to why you're in trouble. And I'm going to try hard to do that. But first of all, I want to know, what does that, you're quite a sturdy human being, I've noticed through the years that we've known each other. But how did it feel to have that level of ire aimed at you, when basically all you've done is walk through life saying what you think, and you may have added one or two little jokes and wry satirical comments in. Does it affect you, those messages, or do you brush them off?
I'd like to say I brush them off. I like to have a stiff upper lip because that's how we're trained to be. Of course, it affects me. Like, I didn't get any sleep on that evening. It would be nice if I had people within my institution who would check in and be there for me and make sure I'm okay. The pastor to the pastors and that kind of stuff. Later on, I'll speak briefly about the church's stance on this, but I won't besmirch my bishop because I'm obedient to my bishop. But the point I'm making is that it's not good to be on your own with these things. It's not great. But at the same time, I genuinely do feel blessed because of this, because every time we're persecuted for the sake of righteousness, we're storing up treasure in heaven. We are blessed because we are hated, because they hated him first, and he told us that we would be blessed because of it. So I try to recenter on that.
Do you think, even though you know what my view on all of this is, I'm going to just try and be a bit odd on you, because why the fuck not? Sorry. But, I want to get to the bottom of, I think it might help us get to the bottom of all of it. Do you think that what you, do you think you should have made that joke while swearing the robes of a priest?
That's a good question. That's a question people have posed. I think yes. I am always a priest. Yeah. Everywhere I am, at all times, I'm always a priest. Wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I'm always a priest. And I have to always remind myself of that. And I don't agree when people say, well, okay, now I can just F and blind and get drunk. And it doesn't work like that. Certainly it doesn't work like that in the eyes of God. And so this is not just for me. It is a good reminder for me to be better, to try to be a better person, to try to be good. But it's also it's a public witness. So that when people see me, the first thing they see is not me. It's a reminder of his church, of Christ's church. It's a public witness for Christ. So the question is it something that is inappropriate to do as a Christian or as a priest? People have different stances on that. I personally don't think I did anything wrong in this instance. I really don't. I've thought about it, and yes, it was cheeky, but it
definitely
helped.
Cheeky.
I am cheeky, first and foremost, but it wasn't immoral. It wasn't unethical. I didn't bring the church into disrepute. I gave 10 minutes on the sanctity of life and the fact that we are Imago Dei, made in the image of God, and I capped it off in a memorable way. Millions of people have now seen this. The pro-life conversation is in the headlines of newspapers across the world. Like, but again, it's but it's just, it's contributing to the conversation. And it's helped in a way that I wouldn't have predicted. I didn't think that part would be the biggest part of it. But, would I do it again? Actually, I don't know if I do it again, but do I regret doing it? No. And I'm not sorry for doing it. I will explain why I did it, but I won't apologize for it unless I'm commanded to, because I think people got it. People understood. Every single Christian I've spoken to is, of course we got it. It was funny, and actually it helped lift up the speech. Good job. Sometimes I say and do things that people are like, no, come on, Calvin, come on. But I don't think this is one of them.
Yeah, so I've watched the speech, and you're sort of half extemporaneous, aren't you? You're quite comfortably talking in front of people. You're not glued to an auto.
It was entirely extemporaneous. I had notes in front of me, so it was some bullet points that I wanted to extrapolate on. But yeah, it was extemporaneous. Yeah.
So did you plan in yourself? Did you think I'm going to do that at the end? Or did it sort of come to you in the moment?
That's a good question. I wanted to end on I wanted to start on something funny and end on something funny.
Yeah.
At the start,
that's what it felt like.
I'm you know, I'm from, if you can't tell, I'm from the old world. I can't tell by my accent, I'm from the old world. Getting a bit of a chuckle just to break the ice. And at the end, end on something to lighten the mood after a very serious chat. And then hopefully that bookends the speech and helps it be more memorable. That's the approach I usually take when I'm speaking.
Yeah. Okay. So then from that position, whoever funds it, Right Wing Watch, I think it was called, am I correct in that? Decides that they're going to display the same amount of fake outrage as, they did over the Musk thing. And I suppose the difference between you and Musk is, you know, it doesn't matter whether anyone mocks Elon Musk, is deliberately bad faith Elon Musk because he's richer than all of them and you just brush it off. But, you know, your position is, what I want to touch on is the fact that is the job of the bishop who came out very quickly with what I view, and by the way, bishop, this has got nothing to do with what Calvin thinks, what I think, and we're friends, so we're allowed to talk about this. And a sort of absolutely deliberately worst possible take version of what was happening. So this begs this another question in my mind, which is, if you are you do a show called The Common Sense Crusade, you are somebody that is really, you know, you do see yourself at the front of the fight. I also see you at the front of the fight, very brave. Do you think it's beholden on the person and on the person to protect you? Because I was talking to my friend Jeffrey about this. It, to protect you in that environment, rather than do everything they can to get the worst possible bad faith take on it. I mean, do you feel hurt by that? I mean, I would feel extremely hurt by that.
So this week I've had more abuse than I've ever had, more threats than I've ever had. I had yesterday morning, I had camera crews at my front door and then in the church as well. Thankfully, there was another priest here in the church who was armed and kind of scared them away. But I've been hounded. And regardless of whether I was right or wrong, and people are able to make their own minds up on that, but whether I was right or wrong, I should have some pastoral support. And again, I'm not going to besmirch any individuals, but I haven't had any pastoral support.
And that's so you did the first you knew of just so that we're
so right. So let me get to the timeline then. Get back from dinner with my warden and the bishop's council, and when I get home, I see on social media people saying, Calvin's been defrocked. Of course, I haven't been defrocked. What are you talking about? That's silly. And one of the tweets had a link to my jurisdiction, the Anglican Catholic Church, which is where I'm serving at the moment. And I click it, and there's a press statement there. I'm like, this is just bizarre. And so I'm like, I haven't been contacted or anything. So I search my inbox, and there is indeed an email amongst all of the abusive ones from my archbishop. Essentially saying very similar to what was on the press release. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I've had my license removed. This is bizarre. I'm like, I don't really know what to do. I can't obviously call him at 10 o'clock or 10 at night or whatever it was. I'll speak tomorrow. Get up first thing Thursday morning, send an email to the bishop saying, can we have a phone conversation or a Zoom call or something? And I get a response saying, I'm getting a lot of emails today. Just write to me whatever you want to write to me. And I'm like, okay, this is, first and foremost, there's a duty of care. Secondly, it's just unprofessional to not, in whatever relationship anyone has with a subordinate, to not speak to them face to face. And thirdly, it'd be nice to have due process or a trial or conversation, a chance to explain myself, a chance to apologize, whatever. Just to be fired by a press release and potentially an email and kind of not have any conversation. I find that troubling, but I'm trying very hard not to speak directly about the archbishop, because I am obedient to my bishops, and I've had press requests from all over. I mean, it has been covered by Independent, The Guardian, The Rolling Stone, for goodness sake, Fox, USA Today. It's all over the shop, and I've rejected every single press request and said I'm not speaking to the media until I've had a conversation with my archbishop. I think that's the fair thing to do.
Should that not have been what he did? I'm not going to ask you the question. I'm going to say, I how I love to make things about myself. I woke up after GB News, the GB News sacking, which actually, you know, it was beyond, GB News was a little was kind of, you know, you could argue that there was reasons to, you know, sanction me. So that, but I woke up to the same thing. Lawrence Fox suspended from Daily News, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Never had a call from any of these people. And it drives me mad. You do think, hang on, these are Christians. These people are meant to be Christians. Why are they not like straight on the phone to you saying, hey, Calvin, listen, this has created a big hoo-ha. And, you know, for whatever reason, we'll discuss the wisdom or lack thereof later. But what do you think we should do? Rather than waking up to a press release or getting home to a press release, that to me seemed, it smacks of something which is so modern and so unhealthy in society, which is, takes back to my point, which is they should really have your back. Because if you're the one that's going out there and you're saying this stuff, and this was just a joke, so it's mad that it's been blown beyond all proportion here. They should admit, one would have hoped the people that you are, you know, the people that you say I'm not going to disparage and the people you're obedient to, you would have hoped that relationship is two-sided. And it seems like it's not in this instance. It seems like, right, okay, I'm going to shut this down by, we'll just get rid of Calvin, that's what we'll do. We won't even, whilst applying the worst possible faith take to it, it drives me absolutely bonkers.
Like, my ministry has always been parish ministry and public ministry, and I love my parish ministry. I was, you know, like, as I said, I was hearing confession that day. I was kind of in, I was sitting there listening to people. I'm with my parishioners who I love, and they love me, and it's a wonderful relationship. It's a blessing to be able to administer the sacraments to people. That is absolutely what I'm called to do. But every time I step back from the public ministry, I get granted another platform by our Lord to speak on something that he cares about, like such as the sanctity of life. And so that is also a part of my calling. And that's difficult for some people to comprehend. Some people are jealous of it. Some people don't like it. Some people don't think priests should be public. I try to say, well, what were the church fathers? What were the original Christians? They were very public with their ministry. We're not called to be silent and quiet in our corners of the church. We're called to be in the world, but not of the world, and proclaim the gospel loudly to disciple the nations. And people need to hear these messages. And the reason the church is dying in the West is because people have stopped hearing these messages, and they just think the church is the same as everything else. And so we need bold leaders who are able to support and encourage prophetic ministries. And we need people that are not going to buckle straight away and be, we need fewer weak and cowardly men. We need strong men who are going to have people's backs and people who are going to be with people on the front lines. And I don't know where they are, but they do exist. So you and Dan have been amazing, like properly supportive. And it is an anxious, like stressful time. It's not very pleasant. So to have good people like you and Dan beside me has been, it's helped a lot. Alison Pearson, I'm going to list some names of people who've been supportive because I love these people. Norman Fenton, Bernie Sporoff, Mahi Artusi, Charlie Sampson, Dr. Callum Miller, Andy No in his own unique way, bless him, Ben Harris Quinney, Matthew Marsden, Larry Taunton, Christine Hamilton, mm-hmm. Eric Metaxas, Brett Murphy is always there, Patrick Coffin, loads of evangelicals, loads of Roman Catholics, like Protestant Catholics across the board have had so much support. And that's, again, that's a blessing because every time I get cancelled, which is getting too often now, I'm reminded of who my friends are and who is on the side that we're fighting with. And that's.
I want to get to the cancel thing, but I want to ask you another question. Do you think that, I'm coming to the conclusion myself, and you don't have to answer this if you don't know what the answer is, but I'm sorry, there's a giant bug just flew there and it's huge and it looks like it wants to eat me. Do you think that even engaging in the debate might have prompted the worst possible faith take? So do you think the fact that you were speaking at a very, very much a pro-life, do you think that was an important factor in the way that it was viewed by the bishop, for example? Do you think he would have preferred, or the church would have preferred, that you didn't speak about life and, you know, the sanctity of it?
I can't speak to his assumptions. I can only say if people want to look up his stance on life, they can. But what I would say to other people who've looked at this in bad faith is that, yes, absolutely.
What's his name again? What's his
Archbishop
name again?
Mark Haviland. But what I'll say is absolutely, okay, just speaking on this issue rattles people who are deceived and rattles demons and people that every Christian should be in favor of the sanctity of life. It's one of the fundamental Christian tenets. Everyone, but people are confused about it and people are against it. And it's one of the things that really riles people up, unfortunately. So it's one of the things we talk about all the more because we need to save these babies from being killed. And at some point in the future, we'll look back on this period of history and think what monsters we must have been allowing people to kill their own offspring and calling it healthcare, reproductive healthcare at that, calling it a woman's right and all these horrible euphemisms we use to kill our own babies. I mean, we treat animals better than we treat our own babies at this point in time. But yes, there are certainly people that would have seen that it was a pro-life thing and being against it for that. And that pretending it's a Nazi salute is just a convenient form of attack.
It's insane that it happened in that way. Okay, so Archbishop Mark Haviland makes his statement.
Yeah, what I want to stress is that the duty of care isn't just to me. The duty of care is to the parish. The parish is the church here, the people here. They have no one to administer the sacraments. They have no one to celebrate Mass for and with them on Sunday. No one's had a conversation with them. These are the people that matter. These are the people that I'm here to serve, and I serve them on behalf of my bishop. I question the thought process behind that and the decisions and the motivations. Like, who's caring about the people here? Of course, I'm still here pastorally. I'm still here with my people and for my people. I cannot serve them in the church at the moment, but I love these people, and I think it's mutual. But I just wish they'd be considered.
And also, will you tell us a little bit about what the response from your parishioners has been? So I'm just trying to look up what Mark Haviland has said about this subject.
I've had a lot of calls from them. Lots of different responses. Some of them are saying they'll no longer return to the church until I'm restored. Some of them are saying they want to take the church out of the diocese, so remove it from the Anglican and Catholic Church and take it into another jurisdiction with a stronger bishop and archbishop. Some of them are saying that there are lots of responses, but they're all very, they're all saying that I'm their priest and the relationship is strong. The bond, I haven't been here that long, but the bond is strong because they believe that I was called here by God. They called me here on behalf of God. They heard God's voice saying that Father Calvin Wilson is your priest. And I also felt called by God to be here. This is a mission and a ministry, a calling from God. And so for anyone to get in the way of that, I'll try to cancel that. They're kind of like, well, where's that coming from? That's the problem.
It's I can't find, and I should have done it, but I know I just convened you a bit early. I can't find in detail what he's saying, but I can see that he's being that he's very legalistic over the topic of abortion. I can see that from his writings. If you've got something you can send me, then that would be great. So your parishioners are on side. It very much must be in our position, in that difficult position that you find yourself when you're out the front, and the rules don't really exist in a way. You're sort of making the rules as you go along while sticking to a very strong set of principles. There's got to be support, and it's so good that your parishioner is doing it. And also on your path and your journey, when I saw you in the States and we I just saw someone who was where they were meant to be. Well, I knew that that's where you were meant to be. And it's just, I'm annoyed I am that you're not around in England. But it makes me happier to see you being fulfilled and on the right journey. What do you want to happen now? Like, what are your next steps? What do you feel? So I'm just going to say to the audience, sort of what I said to you on the phone last night, which is, I don't think you can fight these very, very, very painful personal battles. And, you know, whilst Calvin's doing a very good impression of someone who, you know, I can get through this, it's very painful when you get, where the people you rely on for strength and support withdraw that strength and support. It's very, very hurtful and you feel very alone. I said, you need to speak to the bishop and you need to be firm and you need to say, look, I'm here, I'm fighting for you, in front of God, but I'm fighting, but I'm here to do my job to the best of my ability. And, you know, why are you looking at any opportunity to snip me from under myself? Because you're making it impossible for me to feel secure in any way. And you have a right to feel secure too, right? So what do you want to happen from here?
I'm trying to figure out what God wants to happen. I'm just going to spend some days in prayer and waiting to understand. And I do ask the question, look, am I called to be a parish priest solely? To like to step away from all the media stuff, just focus entirely on the parish?
No, you're not.
This is a question I have to ask. And likewise, yeah. Am I called to step away from parish ministry and just enter public ministry? I ask these questions, I discern them, I pray through them. So a lot of people think, oh, yeah, he's a grifter, this, that, and the other. Like the amount of stuff I turn down because I don't think it's right and proper is more than the things that I take up. But I do feel called to sacramental priestly ministry. I do feel called to public ministry. And there is a fine line and a balance. I don't always get it right, but this is what I'm trying to do. So I'm trying to figure out what God's permitting here and why and where he wants me to go next and what he wants me to do next. Because even if, say, for example, the Archbishop backpedals and says, you know, I acted too suddenly, too harshly, or, you know, I was receiving a bit of pressure and I made the wrong decision. Father Robinson is clearly called to this parish and I restore his license. Even if that happens, at some point in the future, I'm going to say or do something that someone dislikes, some rabid lefty. They're going to pile on. They're going to create a bandwagon. Some right-wing watch is going to use it as an excuse to call me a Nazi or something. There's going to be pressure. And then my superiors are going to receive some pressure and they're going to have to make a decision.
Don't really fucks me off about this. Sorry. It really fucks me off about this. If you were sat there talking about the fact that God loves all people, trans, gay, all that, if you were preaching the complete opposite message, the complete opposite political message, and someone attacked you from our side. So if I wrote to the bishop saying, I can't believe this wanker, Calvin Robinson, who's talking about trans stuff, that doesn't belong in the church. There's no, you know, it's against biblical teaching. He would be defending you till the cows came home. That's what I sense. That the church has been so infected, and I'm just so disappointed the American church doesn't seem to have been, I always thought it hadn't been infected with it. But I think if you were preaching Black Lives Matter, I think you would be getting a pat on the back and a round of applause. And that part of it really grates me.
I just don't know where to go. I need a strong leader. Who can hold me to account? Can I say, Calvin, you're wrong on that one? Or maybe these are the guidelines you need to minister to. You know, this is your line. And I do need accountability, but I also need someone who can support me and say, you know, I've got your back. We'll get you some extra security, or, you know, stay off social media for a few days. I need support and accountability. I need a strong leader because I've got a strong ministry. And so I don't know where to go and what to do. So that's what I'm praying through.
It's because you're naturally a leader yourself, which is difficult. And I think that's hard for people because you will go to places where other people won't go. I mean, this is just the most ludicrous example of the council mob getting what the council mob wanted. And I really struggle to, you're talking, you refer constantly now in our conversation that you're praying through it and you're praying and you're praying and you're praying. I don't sense that whoever has done this, I don't want to judge other people, but I just don't get the sense that there was a lot of prayer involved prior to the very, very bad faith response to a piece of wry satire. And if you're going to get God to people, if you're like you said to me once, you said the job of the Archbishop of Canterbury isn't to have a view on trans and pride, it's to bring people to God. That's his job. You told me that. If that's your job, you're going to have to be courageous in that fight. You have to be courageous in that fight. And that involves all sorts of things like sardonic wit. It involves being persecuted, as you say, and I'm glad you're taking comfort from being persecuted. But this is a fucking joke to me. Sorry. And I want to respect and want to believe that the church has a future, full stop. But how can they? They can't do this all the time. You get cancelled over and over and over again for a joke.
That's the other thing. I mean, I can't keep getting cancelled. Yeah. I can't keep getting cancelled, man. I can't do it.
Mm.
At some point,
you can't.
You've got to be in a structure that's supportive and supports you and has you. You've got to. I can't keep getting cancelled.
not good. I don't think it's. I think you're putting on a pretty brave face. I just would. I would feel so demoralized. I'd feel like giving up. You're lucky that you've got the. Your faith is going well. Jesus was persecuted to the ends of the earth, and you know he carried on. That was the example that's set to me. So the more you're persecuted, the better. And if you've done something that I thought was extremely unwise, which you often, I don't think you've ever done. Really, I mean, you are funny. That is the problem. And it does seep out. So if people knew Calvin and I are private conversations, you know, you get a flicker of it here, but our private conversations involve some, you know, he's ministering to me. And that means that we are, you know, we'll go places that he will.
We'll have a dry sense of humor.
Yeah, you've got a dry sense of humor. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with a dry sense of humor? That's not... Do you think there's anything to my assertion that if you were or my suspicion that if you were preaching something a little bit different? So Professor Norman Fenton put in his tweet.
We can look at examples. So there's a rabid There's a rabid lefty in the Anglican Catholic Church who has Trump derangement syndrome. He's attacked me publicly since the moment I joined. He is a priest. He's just retired, but he's still got his license. All these years, hasn't been admonished, hasn't had his license revoked.
Right.
But I mean, at some point I have to ask the question, is it me, right? So the Church of England, the Royal Academy of Dance, the Conservative Party, GB News, Mere Anglicanism, Clear Truth Media, and now the Anglican Catholic Church. Like, at some point I have to just, like, address, is there something I can do to stop myself getting blooming cancelled? Or is this what I'm supposed to do? Am I supposed to get cancelled for the ministry that I have? And anyway,
well, I don't think you've got a messiah complex. I don't think you really need to worry about whether, you know, the is it me question always comes with the messiah complex question. It's like, are they persecuting me because I'm right? No, I think it's because you're happy to talk about things that other people aren't happy to talk about. And I was quite moved by Professor Norman Fenton's tweet, which, if I can find it, I will read. Because, you know, this is the thing about you. People will disagree with you, but they know who you are. So, right, Professor Norman Fenton says this about Calvin. Sorry, I just got cycled down through how he tweets. But I have disagreements with Calvin Robinson on some issues, but what Loza Fox says here is spot on. It's bad enough Elon Musk was wrongly accused of being a Nazi for his gesture. Canceling Calvin for jokingly mimicking it is beyond ludicrous. P.S. My dad was a Holocaust survivor.
So, do you know how many of my Jewish friends have got in touch to say this is absolutely ludicrous? This is just stupid. We know you're not a Nazi. Everyone can see you're not doing a Nazi salute. You don't hate Jewish people. You don't hate anyone because of their race or religion. This is just stupid. The amount of Jewish people that have got in touch to say that. So it's a fun.
But this is what drives me fucking crazy. Sorry, I know that I'm trying so much because I was watching your Fox Bible last week and I was just going, I've really tried this week to listen to you a bit. But what drives me crazy is the very people who you can't even say the word Jew without their face contorting into a sort of, ugh. You are the very people that are turning around and adopting a moral supremacist version over what you've. What you absolutely was a joke. I'm like, how does one? I think your question is the better question, which is it me? Yes, is the answer to a degree. It is you. You have very strong views on stuff. And also, we've sat in rooms where people disagree very deeply with what you think, and you're pretty chilled about it. You'll have a conversation with them, and you don't change your view just because you're sat there with someone who doesn't do it. So yeah, to a degree, it is you. It is the fact that you are a man of your conviction and you're a man of your faith, and that is your faith. And you're not. It happens to be very, very conveniently backed up by the Bible, if you ever read that once in a while. So it is you, but this crucial element of where you get your support from, because I don't think you can get cancelled over and over again. I don't think it's fair. And I was speaking to my friend Jeffrey, and Jeffrey said to me, he said, you know, my job is to protect you. That's my job. And I think, yeah, that makes sense. you know, if I'm bad, I'll be admonished. And, you know, if you're wrong, you'll be admonished. And I've asked you the questions at the beginning. Do you think it was wise? I'm wise. And you give me your straight answer. And I'm, you know, I don't feel I have to really push back on it because it's so fucking obviously a joke. But,
so it's not healthy, right? So the stress of it isn't healthy. But also there's the worldly concerns, right? So I'm living at the behest of this church, quite literally. You know, they've brought me out to the United States. I live in their rectory. So there's all those questions as well, like what's going to happen to me? So all of that stuff is not good. And I had the same problem in the UK as well. So you can't keep going through that. You need security in life. That's what you said earlier. I think that's true. But again,
spiritual but there are other, there's lots of forms of security. Absolutely. Sorry to interrupt you. There's the form of security of going, the most important form of security you've got comes from God, right?
Which is that God will provide. And we know that at an intellectual level, but still on an emotional level, it's like, whoa, where am I going to be next week? Right? It's still a human concern. And so that's what I'm dealing with.
All I can say over that issue, and you've been through it, you're the only person, I think I can count on one hand, people that don't have bottomless pits of money to be able to speak truthfully at issues. I think I can count one hand, and you're one of them, is that it is extremely draining, and you do need the support of someone. You know, I'm here being supported, for example. You know, despite the crazy mad things that I say on a regular basis, very unwise on many people's understandings of things.
Varying degrees.
I just got so upset with Bushra Sheikh. So can we switch topics? Just because I'm that'll so be good. I'm in there, start swearing, and I don't want to do that. So, yesterday, our Assyrian friend. Well, not our Assyrian friend. I found out really sadly this morning that he followed me. And I had no idea that he did follow me. But yesterday, he was gunned down in the street. I'm just trying to find what was written. Ah, she threatened me as well. So Salwan Momika was killed in Sweden while filming a live stream. He was a famous Quran burner. But there's much more to the story, as we all know, than that.
I don't know anything about this, so fill me in as if I'm stupid.
Okay. So yesterday in Sweden, an Iraqi refugee, I suppose would be the right word, an Assyrian Christian came, or ex-Muslim. I don't know enough about him, to be fair. But anyway, he fled Iraq because his family were being murdered by ISIS and his friends were being murdered by ISIS, by the rabid Mohammedan death cult. And he came to Sweden and he had a habit of burning Qurans. Mm-hmm. And he was shot dead yesterday while doing a live stream.
Wow.
And there's a woman who we have come across, and I'm sure both of us have come across, called Bushra Sheikh.
I'm sure she was very sympathetic.
So this is within an hour of him being killed. Some of you may disagree, but the public desecration of any holy book should be viewed as a hate crime and the offender should face consequences.
Wow. So hate crimes are a death sentence now. She's purporting that we should have blasphemy laws and we should kill people if they burn a Quran. This is just disgusting.
I'm disgusted by it. And she's on Channel 4. This is what I mean about like the backup system. She's on Channel 4 doing a documentary. They're holding her up as some sort of great example of diversity. I'm sure that you won't agree with my, you will think that my response is pretty unwise. But, you know, as you know, I'm a man who is often led by my heart. I said, the minute I get back to England, I'm going to buy a job lot of Qurans and burn a lot of them.
No, I understand that entirely. When I heard from your PA before the show, and she was saying, he's asked me to buy a load of Qurans to burn. I was like, okay, I don't know what this is about. And now I understand entirely why.
The minute I get back to England, I want to buy a job lot of your Sky Wizards magic book, and I want to burn a whole lot of them in the back garden. I hope it offends you a great deal.
They can't kill people like that.
Then the Afro caveman death cult. if we do a sort of 30,000 foot view of the whole thing, how on earth can we live side by side with people that will kill you for criticizing their God? How can we do that? Just goodness, tell me.
What is the world coming to? It is good to put things in perspective, though. We've just spent an hour moaning because I've had just lost a job, but this guy's been killed for standing up for his beliefs. That's he's a martyr. But I support you in whatever you're doing in regards to this. It's horrible, and these people.
So like, you're pro burning of the Quran.
Oh, when you put it like that, it sounds so black and white.
Oh, come on, Calvo, give me the answer. Are you a Quran pro burner?
We need a way to protest against this death cult and the blasphemy that comes along with it.
I reckon you've got to burn the fucking Quran. It's like, fine. You know, if you burnt the Bible, I'd feel sad. If someone burnt the Bible, I'd feel sad. But I wouldn't go, I'm going to kill you for burning the Bible. If you burnt the complete works of Shakespeare, I'd feel sad. If you burnt Northanger Abbey, I'd be sad, because I think you shouldn't burn books. I think it's a stupid thing to do. But you should have the right to do that.
You should. You certainly shouldn't be killed for it, especially if it's your book. Yeah.
That really hurts me. I wonder that the number of people that contacted me today and said, if you do that, this is major bad news. You're putting a target on your back.
That's the thing I'm worried about. That's you, Lawrence.
But that's the mission.
I know.
So I have to submit, do I?
Is there another way for you to make this message without getting the target on your back?
Wrap up a Bible and a Quran and burn them both? Or wrap up a Bible and a Quran in a pride flag and burn them both? Yeah. To take every sacred text and put it in a bonfire and burn them all, you know. They'll, just to say that
I don't want them to come for you, right. And they will come for you, because that's what they're like. It's a death cult, as we know.
Well, they are. They're in the replies to her tweet, which her second tweet was to threaten my children. So I just, for me, I'm like, I'm really, really, really struggling with this idea of submission, because. You've got sins of omission and sins of commission. So the sin of omission is to do nothing and to pretend it's not happening, which is why England is in such a terrible place in the first place, a faithless, godless shithole, in shorthand. But a sin of commission is to say, okay, well, if either all of our faiths and religions are equal, and therefore each and every one of those books should be celebrated and lauded and our religions should all be equal, which what a secular person would say. But the problem is, you don't get a ton of Christian suicide bombers.
No, you don't.
You don't get a ton of... You don't get actual Rudy Cabana pleading guilty.
No.
And suddenly, we don't care that he's got an ISIS manual. We don't care that he targeted Taylor Swift concerts. We don't care that in Germany they shut down Taylor Swift concerts. We're going to get no information about this guy. And I'm starting to go to myself, it's enormously covered up. So the sake of protecting this, what I like to think of as a cry bully group, who say, look, you're persecuting us. We want blasphemy laws. You can't be Islamophobic. And it's like, well, hang on, let's apply that to everyone then. You can't be Christianophobic. You can't be, Hebrewophobic or whatever
the one we're they call that one anti-Semitic.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Oh, yeah, that's a famous expression. But you can't... If we live in a secular, modern, liberal democracy, right, which we very much do, surely then all religions would then be equal within that system of government. But why are we affording this extra luxury to Muslims, whereby you desecrate their book and you get killed? It's just a tragedy. David Ames. Yeah.
We don't live in a secular, liberal democracy. We live in a Christian democracy. So the Christian faith should actually take paramount, but it doesn't. If for some reason Islam does, takes priority. I don't know what that's about. Whether it's fear, ignorance, cowardice, I have no idea. I suppose a mixture of all three, probably. Many people don't know that I used to own, or I own, a video games reviews website called godisageek.com, right? So I've owned this for decades now. For the last 10 years or so, I haven't been associated with it. So I have not been part of the editorial team, because the games industry, is massively left-wing. Gamers are based and right-wing, and gamers are sound, but the games journalists, they like to call themselves journalists, they're not really, are massively left-wing. So I had a few working on my site that were relatively okay, okay people, you know, moderates, but appease the left as much as they can to get by in the industry. So they essentially pushed me out a long time ago and said, we can't have you associated because you're so conservative. You're bringing anyway, left them to it. They've all walked out as of yesterday. So I have a video games reviews website for sale, godisageek.com. It's on Metacritic. It's on billboards. It's on the backs of video game packages. It's well known. It's got a good reputation. If you're looking to buy a video games reviews website, get in touch.
Alvin, we need to get you, we need to get that sold, godisageek.com. I genuinely, I pray and I hope and I believe and I genuinely know actually. So it's, that is a comfort to me that as you walk through this, fire that you're walking through, and I know this from personal experience that you, that a sort of, worldly salvation, you know what I mean? I'm not putting it well, but comes from corners that you will never understand. And I genuinely hope that people who are here watching us this evening will A, reach out to the bishop concerned, and many people have, and I've had some very loving messages. And, you know, Steve Jackson, I think has been absolutely wonderful to write to, and so many others to really, the left are very good at cancelling, and the right need to learn how to uncancel better. And so I hope that we keep up the pressure to say, you know, this is a good man. And, you know, if you're going to cancel, if you're going to get a few complaints and you're going to cancel someone, then perhaps some counter complaints are a good thing. So please do write to the bishop, and please do think, have Coven in your prayers, and also have Coven in your fucking wallet, with all due respect, and buy godisageek.com. Somebody, thank you very much. And
I've just had messages from Gadsad and Yoram Hazani, another couple of my Jewish friends reaching out to make sure I'm okay. I just love the irony of it. But today I'm meeting with the local Eastern Orthodox Church, two priests from there, and then later on I'm meeting with the local Roman Catholic Church. So I've got support from my Christian brothers in town, which is good. But anyway,
just not your own. Just not your boss.
Oh yeah.
At the moment, you don't feel. If I, as I said to you on the phone last night, I'm happy to share with our viewers. I think you should be firm. I think you should stand up and be firm. So it's you know, how are we going to get the message of God across to people without a bit of satire, humor, humility? You know, a little bit of mockery of the very people that hate God. You know, we can't appease the godless. It's a mistake to do that.
Anyway, isn't it? We spent far too long talking about me, so let's wrap up and I'll go and have a cup of coffee.
All right. Well, listen, I love you. You're in Lizzie's and my thoughts, and I, you know, I'm just...
Is Lizzie out there with
me? I love you, man. Yeah.
Oh, good.
She's here. And Alison is here, and she is... She's horrified by what they've done.
We'll send love to them both,
and we hope that you woke up yesterday morning or this morning with knowing that our friend the bishop's inbox will be full of love and support for you and all the people that follow you and us in your journey and my journey. We're very, very grateful. And, you know, in times of great uncertainty, of which Calvin and I live through frequently, we haven't talked about reform this week, which is good. You can also, you must buy things that are real, tangible. It's gold.
Gold Bullion Partners and a few of our listeners have decided that while being faced with the tyranny of potential digital IDs and CBDCs and what where they can keep their money safely without it being removed from the government, they've come up with the idea of gold. Well, this is actually silver.
Well, I've got some gold.
I've got some gold too. But my gold's a little one.
So the problem is your money isn't yours if it's in the bank and you can't rely on it. You can't trust the banks. So we've got to invest in assets.
No capital gains tax.
That's interesting.
No capital gains tax.
I've got a lot of friends who are buying gold and silver, actually.
Yeah. Non-traceable. I'm buying silver because gold's a bit up there for me at the moment. I could probably get one of these. But this is legal tender.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could...
I wouldn't want to spend it, though.
No, I'm just saying.
A lot of places aren't accepting legal tender anymore. That's part of the problem. That the more we go to a cashless society, the more the government can control everything that we do. They can see every penny we spend. They can control where we spend it. That's not a good thing.
But gold and silver are holding their values beautifully in Absolutely. The world. And in times of trouble, people tend to lean and go towards gold and silver. So, you know, Gold Bullion Partners, guys. The link will be in the show notes. And if you so feel that you want to.
Absolutely. Do your own research, look into it.
Yeah. And we will carry on buying it ourselves, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
Right. I love you. And you're amazing. And I admire you. And I'm so blessed to call you my friend.
Love you, brother. Thank you, man, for all your support. I appreciate you.
Oh, man.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.